Dan McLaughlin, the call last night on FS Midwest. You heard from the Cardinal first baseman, Paul Goldschmidt. As the Cardinals were able to salvage a victory against the Marlins, pull that one from the jaws of disappointment last night, a 2-1 victory. As you heard, Paul Goldschmidt hits the game-winning homer in the 11th after the Cardinals had failed to get a run home with the bases loaded and nobody out in the bottom of the 10th inning. Reed Lowe is in for BT and Ranji today. I'm Randy. Great to have you with us, and good to have the Cardinals get a win. They need to get on a roll here.
Yeah, I stayed up for it last night, had a look. I saw that it was 1-0. I wanted to see if they were going to close it out, and they didn't. They allowed that one run to come in, and then I was really nervous when they had the bases loaded, and they didn't really get the bases loaded with anything good. It was kind of two junky hits, and then there was a decent hit, and then couldn't make it happen. Couldn't get a strike.
Double play, bing bang boom, you're done.
I'll tell you what, the pitcher that came in for the Marlins did a heck of a job there, getting the guys out and making the right pitches and knowing who he was throwing to.
Yeah, that was Austin Bryce, and he thought that he had allowed the home run to Goldschmidt earlier. And obviously didn't. And then Sergio Romo comes in and gets everybody with his slider. He gets Bader on the strikeout and then is able to induce the double play. So a good job overall by the Cardinals to rebound from that, get the home run from Goldschmidt. And the highlight of the night was Daniel Ponce de Leon. Six innings, he was terrific. He struck out six. He allowed only two hits, and he threw shutout ball for his six innings. And with the struggles the Cardinals have endured in the starting rotation, Losey, I'm thinking that there's got to be a spot in there, whether it's an injury because we've seen the injuries the Cardinals have had to Waka and Wainwright, or whether it's for performance, specifically with a guy like Michael Waka. Daniel Ponce de Leon right now deserves another start.
Oh, without question, he deserves another start, and it's really too bad that they were allowed to tie it up. He didn't get a win in his first big league start, but he pitched a heck of a game. He did everything they were expecting him to do, and you know, we've seen times before where guys come in and play major roles, and the Cardinals are looking for something to spark them, just like any team that hasn't played up to their capabilities. And if this is a guy that's going to come in and block out all the bad that's been seen and pitch strikes and pitch like he can like he did last night, it should be good for them.
We've seen so many different situations where guys take advantage of opportunities, but he's got to be presented the opportunity first. The most recent, of course, is Jordan Binnington. Sure. He gets the opportunity and runs with it. And in pro sports, that's just the way of the world. Albert Pujols returns to St. Louis tomorrow. He was given his opportunity at the beginning of the 2001 season, and Ponce de Leon can't prove himself unless he gets an opportunity.
Have to have an opportunity in sports, and sometimes guys get them and they don't capitalize on them. Sometimes guys that maybe deserve them don't get them, and they have to find their way and keep battling and keep struggling through whatever league or minor leagues or whatever it is they're doing. And again, this is an opportunity where a kid came in, pitched a great game, and of course, if you're the manager, if you're the management of that team, you have to find another start from somewhere down the line.
The Cardinal manager, Mike Schilt, was asked about the possibility of Ponce de Leon getting more starts. So hopefully he will.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Paul Goldschmidt had been in a 1-for-20 slump heading into that last at-bat last night. He's a better hitter than that. And I think, this is just my personal opinion, that the Cardinals' issues revolve around two things. Number one, it's the production of their top two perceived hitters, Goldschmidt and Carpenter. If they get those guys going and get a front-of-the-rotation starting pitcher, I think this team would be fine. I think because of the fact that they aren't playing great, we have a tendency to look at the whole picture and say, no, it's not even capable of being great. They are capable of being really, really good, though. And no team has all-stars at every position. If you have your all-stars playing like all-stars, and then you fill in that one hole that you thought was filled with Carlos Martinez before spring training, this would be a really good team.
Really good team. And I think that's the part of when you take a look at a baseball team or a hockey team or whatever, you take a look at them on paper and you see all the stats and you see everything that comes along with it. Doesn't always equate when you get on the field or on the ice or on the diamond or whatever it is you're going to get onto. And I think that when you take a look at this team or any other teams, you have to have your guys that you're paying the money to perform. And if they don't perform, it's really tough. And I think when you take a look from, you know, even what the Blues did at the beginning of the season, they had their top players that weren't performing, and Yao was sending them back out onto the ice and back out onto the ice. And I think that there has to be a moment where you take something away from them, almost like you would your kids, you know what I mean, to get them to understand, hey, listen, If you're not going to perform, we're a performance league. We have to be able to perform. Right. And if the guys aren't going to perform, then at some point in time you have to do what you did. And I think I heard the stat last night, two for 22 in Goldschmidt is, and they're both home runs.
Yeah.
And both times those home runs were hit when he was being sat and got put back in. So
right.
Whether they were days off or he was getting sad, it really isn't the matter, but it's that, hey, I'm not playing, I don't like this, get a chance to come in and you win two big games for your team. So I think that's the positive, and you got to reach in and grab that positive and run with it too.
Meanwhile, from a team standpoint, the Cardinals have won 7 of 11. Losey, they have 15 games left before the All-Star break, including tonight against Miami, a 6:15 game. None of the games they play leading up to the All-Star break are against a team with a winning record. You have to take advantage of those opportunities. The Cardinals have a better than 500 record against losing teams this year, and you need to clean up on those teams that you're supposed to beat.
Well, and you have to find a rhythm, and I think that this is an opportunity for the Cardinals to get out there and start to play baseball the way that their team does it. And I think that, you know, I'm not a baseball expert, but I've watched a bunch of games this year, and the one thing that I've seen between the beginning of the season when they were doing it right and where they're at over the last several games is that they're not doing the little things right in and out, and that's the biggest mm-hmm. thing in all sports. If you're not going to play the game the way that your team is going to be successful, you're not going to have success. And so that's the one thing that I would like for them to really kind of hone in on. Have your team meetings, do whatever you're doing, and say, okay, what kind of baseball are we going to play, and then commit to it.
And that goes back to the main tenet with this team, the starting pitching. If they can get the starting pitching straightened out, and if Daniel Ponce de Leon is part of that, all the better. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's Reed Lowe. I'm Randy Carricker. Ryan O'Reilly and the Blues bringing back more hardware from Vegas. We'll talk about last night's NHL awards and the Blues wins and losses next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Ryan O'Reilly last night, as the Blues were able to bring the Stanley Cup up to the front of the stage in Las Vegas at Mandalay Bay during the NHL Awards. And the Blues only got one award last night. That was Ryan O'Reilly winning the Selke. But they got the big award last week. And I don't think that they're really bothered by the fact that they didn't get any of the individual regular season accolades that they were up for.
And I think they had a great opportunity to win any of them, and they ended up only taking one, but just showed you how great the back end of the season was and what a turnaround it was to have four guys that basically excelled in half a hockey season get put into an award situation after the first part of the season was so dismal that they were actually in last place and had a coach be fired and everything else. So they've got to be proud of where they're at, but I'll tell you what. For me, I've been congratulated, and I'm like, I only played for the Blues at one point in time. I'm not really sure why you're congratulating me, but I spin that congratulations off to all the fans, because like I told you before we get on here, I've only been a fan of the Blues since 1996 when I was drafted here. And for these fans that have been waiting around since 1967 and all the jokes that have come along with it, for them to be able to be given this trophy, these guys are absolutely sincere. This organization's absolutely sincere. I'm sincere. This is for the fans, because we have the best fans in the entire league.
Yeah, the level of loyalty is stunning when you look at everything that this team has been through in terms of the seven different owners and all the GMs and coaches, and to have had the four winningest coaches in the history of the league and never gotten a cup out of it. There have been a lot of journeys that have been snuffed out before you got to the cup, and people have stuck with it. And congratulations, I'm with you, to those people.
A lot of players that played in St. Louis and then went on to win Stanley Cups in other spots, right? Brett Hull, you know, the list is infinite.
Think about the
TJ Oshie, yeah. Those are just the last 30 years.
Yeah, that 96 team, you had five Hall of Famers at once. You had Gretzky, Hull, MacInnis, Pronger, and Feuer. And you talk about all the guys that have left. Scott Stevens leaving and winning three. Hull, Shanahan, Steve Duchesne, Chris Pronger, Corey Stillman. We can go down the list. TJ, as you mentioned. There was a stretch there for about 20 years where every single Stanley Cup winner had a former Blue on.
It really did, and infuriated the fans, even though they still came out. They weren't going to not come to the hockey games, because they have to know, they have to be there to cheer. It's in their blood. They have to have it. But, yeah, there was definitely a lot of disappointment that came along, and you take a look at that series in 96. Everyone was touting the Blues when they got Gretzky to win the Stanley Cup, and if Grant Fuhr doesn't get hurt, maybe they do, right? Like, that's a huge thing that happened to them in the playoffs, and then you take our 2001 team that I was on that lost in the conference finals. Peter Forsberg ruptures his spleen, and then all of a sudden Patrick Waugh takes the team on his back, and Roman Turk didn't live up to expectations. And again, another goalie issue. And again, you see to this year how important it is for goaltending, right? And even in the last conference finals when Brian Elliott was a goaltender, he was the only reason why the Blues were even in the conference finals, but yet still struggled a little bit as Jake Allen got to take the net because the San Jose Sharks were dumping the pucks on Brian Elliott, and the Blues were having troubles winning those faceoffs, and they got so much more offensive time in that zone. So there's been lots of reasons, but most of the reasons are the Blues just didn't have the goaltending, and they definitely got it this year.
Quick baseball note for you. The Cardinals will start Adam Wainwright tonight against the Marlins in the finale of a four-game series, and Daniel Ponce de Leon has been optioned back to Memphis, but I'm sure we'll see him again soon. Reed, let's talk about some of the awards last night. Obviously, the fact that the Blues only played well from January on, affected them. John Cooper led one of the all-time great seasons in hockey history. Barry Trotz, as we've mentioned, you mentioned during the crossover, engineered one of the great turnarounds we've seen of late with the loss of Tavares in New York, and Robin Leonard, there were questions about him, and he puts a team together that is in the running and has a great season, in the running all year long. So it shouldn't be a surprise that Trotz and John Cooper, who both had great 82-game seasons, would wind up ahead of Craig Berube, who essentially coached for half of a season.
Half a season, and you know, I guess that's part of when these writers or whoever makes these decisions and has the votes wants to see what the thinks maybe it trumps putting it together for a full season rather than just being that opportunity where you got an opportunity and you did it for half a season. But again, I think when it comes back to it, it was I wasn't surprised. I was a little disappointed because I wanted Chief to get it. But at the end of the day, I think that Barry Trotz and Cooper both had amazing years, and that's a tough one.
Same thing with Jordan Binnington not winning the Calder, because Elias Pettersson had a great first half of the season. He really took a downturn after the All-Star break when Binnington was spectacular, but what Pettersson did in the first half of the season stuck with the voters, clearly.
It obviously stuck with them, and I think if there was one of these for me that I really would have liked to have seen, it would be this trophy go to Binnington, just because he didn't really have the opportunity to play in the first part of the season, and who knows what would happen if he did play in the first part of the season. Maybe the Blues wouldn't have needed to have all this, but maybe they wouldn't have won the cup either. So there's a lot of what ifs and what could have beens, and I just think that when you take a look at a goalie that comes in and plays as well as he does and is instrumental in what happens to his team, right? This is the one caveat that the Blues have struggled with mightily over the years, and what he did to come in and play, and just the confidence and the swagger, and it wasn't a cockiness. It was just his comments where he'd look at somebody and say, "Did you see it? Did the puck bounce? Yeah, good vision," right? Like, just those kinds of comments where he keeps his team, you know, where they might right at the very beginning might be going, "Oh, well, can this guy back it up?" Well, he backed it up without any question, and so that's the one that I was really cheering for, because I really feel like because of the downturn that Pettersson's had, that maybe he would have had an opportunity. And again, the voters didn't see it, but that was probably the one we really should have had.
Binnington was named to the all-rookie team as the goalie. Anthony Cirilli of Tampa Bay, Elias Pettersson of Vancouver, Brady Tkachuk of Ottawa, Rasmus Dahlin of Buffalo, and Miro Heiskanen of Dallas, all joining Binnington on the rookie team. And he is the first Blues player to make the all-rookie team since Colton Parayko in 2015-2016, and joins Jake Allen, who was an all-rookie player twice for the Blues. He was on the all-rookie team as a goalie two different times, Jake Allen was. So Binnington joins Allen as Blues all-rookie goalies. And Jordan was also the clutch performer of the playoffs.
Oh, obviously. And for me, he should have been the Conn Smythe winner. Maybe co-Conn Smythe was, with nothing to take away from what Ryan O'Reilly did. But the Blues aren't in, you know, with the position they're in without him. I don't think if they didn't have him play as well he did in the first 10 minutes of Game 7, they would have won that game.
Agreed.
If Boston scores that armpit save or one of those others on that power play and gets a power play goal on the only power play that was given there, I don't think the Blues win the Stanley Cup. And for me, he was not given it because of his two bad performances. And I shouldn't say bad, because it takes a team, and he wasn't that bad. There was a couple bad bounces, but they were blowouts, and that looks bad. if Jordan Binnington and the St. Louis Blues were only up 2-1 and he makes two or three big saves in the last 45 seconds, he's a Conn Smythe Trophy winner. And so knowing and believing that that's the truth, I'm not sure how he doesn't get it anyways. But again, that's not up to me. It's up to the voters. But I just think that he was a guy that if the Blues didn't have... And the Blues really didn't have Ryan O'Reilly in the second, halfway through the second, and most of the third round with ribs. Like his play wasn't bad. He was still giving it, but his face-offs were down. And when I look at that, there's got to be something that comes into it. But I know it's a more of a Stanley Cup Finals trophy than it is everything, even though everything comes into play.
In Vegas, SNL's Kenan Thompson was the host, and he took his jabs.
Shout out to my Tampa folks. That's right, they tied the most wins in a regular season with 62, and then they followed it up by tying the least wins in a playoff with 0. But hey, I mean, that's what I like about them. Win or lose, they set records.
He's funny, man.
He's terrific. I love him. That was a good show last night. Next up in the fast lane, a big win for STLFC last night. Plus, Albert is coming back to the Lou. That's all next in your Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. We want to hear from you later on in the show. Reed Lowe, Randy Carricker, Chris Kerber will join us later with BT doing the Cardinals tonight and Chris Ranji out. And we want to hear from you with the Mic Drop feature on the 101 ESPN app. Albert Pujols returns to Busch Stadium tomorrow. What player are you thrilled you got a chance to see in your lifetime? And what was so special about seeing them live? What do you remember? What about a player you regret not ever seeing play live? Leave us a mic drop on the 101 ESPN app if you ever had that opportunity to see somebody and didn't take advantage of it. But with Albert, when you got a chance to see him, you probably saw the best hitter that you will ever see in our lifetimes.
Well, for sure. He's still good.
Yeah.
And he was just an absolute laser beam when he was with the Cardinals for those years. I know they talk about, from a statistical standpoint, him maybe having the best 10-year run ever in the history of baseball. And when you start talking about guys in the best of their sport ever, especially one that's as long and full of great players in America's pastime as baseball is, to be brought up in the names of those guys, you're pretty good.
And if you're going to the games this weekend, a chance to see Mike Trout. So maybe that's one of the guys that if you see him this weekend, you'll be thrilled about getting a chance to see play. Was it Wayne Gretzky with the Blue Note? Was it Kurt Warner? Whoever it was, the athlete that you got a chance to see that you're thrilled about, leave us a mic drop with the 101 ESPN app. Tell us who you got to see and why it was so exciting for you. The Cardinals wrap up their four-game series with Miami tonight at the ballpark. 6:15, don't forget the early start. Adam Wainwright will pitch against former Cardinal farmhand Zach Gallen, and it's a 6:15 start. The Cardinals have activated Adam Wainwright to pitch tonight, and Daniel Ponce de Leon has been returned to Memphis. The Cardinals also announced that Jairo Munoz has been removed from the paternity list and placed on the restricted list due to travel delays in his return to St. Louis. So Tommy Edman will remain with the ball club for the time being. So there you go.
There's a lot of lists in baseball, isn't there?
They've got plenty of lists, yeah. No doubt about it. There is a lot else going on in the world of sports. The Cardinals have promoted their top prospect, Nolan Gorman, hitting .241 with a .344 on base and a .448 slug in 67 games with Peoria, has been moved to High A Palm Beach. So the Cardinals are slowly but surely moving Gorman up the chain. He was part of the All-Star game in the Midwest League on Tuesday, and now he's going to go to play for Palm Beach State League. So Nolan Gorman, a guy that probably we'll see at Double A by the end of this season and Triple A early next year. And I would think that we might see Nolan Gorman, their top prospect, by next season, by 2020.
It's one of the things that the St. Louis Cardinals have been so good at for so many years, and being a mid-market team and not wanting to spend the money that some of the others have the capabilities to do in Major League Baseball is having great scouting and having great development. And they've proven that time and time again. They haven't gone out there and given the huge salaries, although they have given a couple here and there over the last few years, more than they did in the past. But I'll tell you what, they have a heck of a scouting system and a heck of a farm team system that they have their players running through.
Couple of daylight games in the majors. The Rangers leading Cleveland 4-1 as they play in the eighth inning. Rockies and Diamondbacks are playing at Chase Field in Arizona. They're in the bottom of the second, and they are tied at one apiece. We're off early tonight for the NBA draft. Zion Williamson expected to be the number one pick of the New Orleans Pelicans, and you'll be able to hear that here on 101 ESPN. Losey, you grew up as a fan of the Montreal Expos, and Jeff Passan of ESPN reporting that the Rays have received permission to split their home games between their current home in Tampa Bay and Montreal. Rob Manfred was able to confirm the report, and while the plan is in its early stages, the Rays apparently have embraced the two-city solution.
That's pretty cool. This one kind of sends me for a little bit of a loop. I don't think it's something that we've seen a lot of, if ever. You're a little bit more sports crew than me. Have we ever seen a team play in two cities?
Not like this. We had the Kansas City Omaha Kings in basketball, but Omaha only got like five home games a year. Nothing where it was split, where the early portion of the season would be played in Tampa. They play the rest of the year in Montreal, and we don't know where playoff games would be played. Yeah. And apparently there would be new stadiums in both cities.
Well, that's great for Montreal to get baseball back in there, because they did support it when the teams were good. And just like the Blue Jays have, when the Blue Jays are good, the fans in Canada support it. The only thing for me is I take a little bit further look into it. What do they expect the players to do? Own homes in two of them?
Or that's a good point.
Is the team going to pay for a home in one spot? Because I know, if you're in a, for me, in the NHL, if you're in the NHL and you're on a one-way contract or a two-way contract and they tell you to get a place to live here and they send you down to the minors or call you up, vice versa, you only have to pay for one of your homes. So there's just some logistic things that come with that being so far away. Right? If it's Tampa and something real close, it'd be something else. But to say we're going to go all the way to Montreal, Quebec, Canada, that's a journey. It's going to be interesting to see how that rolls.
Okay, I'm going to give you, if you have a DVR running on the USA women's soccer game, turn down your radio for 10 seconds because they're in the 74th minute and they lead Sweden 2-0 as they play in the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. So U.S. up 2-0. Meanwhile, the STLFC played FC Cincy of MLS last night, beat them 1-0. That's the second game now that St. Louis FC has beaten an MLS team. So they're showing the ability to play with anybody that's out there.
Well, and I think that from that standpoint, if there was anybody that was wondering whether or not St. Louis is a good sports town, I think they've proved it over the last few weeks, and they've always proved it with the Cardinals and the Rams as well. And so hopefully we can get that done.
Yeah. And as we mentioned in the last segment last night, the hockey award ceremony in Vegas, everybody got on a plane for Vancouver this morning. The NHL draft is tomorrow night in Vancouver, and the Blues don't have a first-round pick. They won't pick until the second. They're okay with not having the 31st pick in exchange for Ryan O'Reilly.
Very well. I'll take just that entire trade. And we've talked about it before with Doug Armstrong. He is a great GM. He's been GM of the year. He's done a great job here. I haven't been always so happy with some of the re-signings that I've seen. But when it comes to taking a cap issue or a player with cap issues that maybe isn't performing and bundling it up and working draft picks and prospects and bringing something to town, Shen, Ryan O'Reilly, he's done an outstanding job with the trades. And so, he's going to have to look at another one of those with Jake Allen. What's he going to do with Jake? Obviously, Jake's not going to be the backup at $4.25 million next year. So he's got another guy that, has pros and cons to it. He's got a Stanley Cup champion ring on his finger, but he also has mashed potatoes for a mind some days. So where is it going to be when it comes to Jake Allen and somebody taking a flyer on him? I would think that there's plenty of teams out there that want to give Jake Allen another shot at the National Hockey League level. He's never proven to be the number one goalie, but it'd be interesting to see what happens if he gets another shot, which I expect him to.
And his physical skill set, his body type, is as good as anybody's.
Yep.
Like you say, it's all between the ears for him. We know that Jarmo Kekäläinen drafted him, and they're losing Bobrovsky, and they really don't have a number one type goalie in Columbus. And there are a couple of other teams out there that are going to be looking for a number one type guy. Teams are always willing to take a chance on talent.
always willing to take a chance on talent, and he's definitely a guy that has the talent. And, you know, he's still a young guy, and there's a lot of goaltenders like Dwayne Ralston that didn't really start performing until he was 31 years old, 32 years old before he made the National Hockey League, and then played till he was 41. So had 10 years in the minors and 10 years in the NHL. So to say that it's over for Jake Allen is far from stretch. Fundamentally, he's a sound goaltender. He just has troubles really thinking through the game and keeping it consistent all the way through the year, which isn't something that goaltenders, you know, are just, it's an easy trait. Like, you're the last line of defense. It's really hard to be the hero and the zero. And so I hope for him and that he's going to get another shot. But this might be an opportunity for Doug Armstrong to bring back some draft picks or maybe another prospect along the way that can help their system and maybe fulfill some of these needs down the line from a draft standpoint.
Couple of station notes for you. Tomorrow we're going to start our 101 ESPN Fastlane summer tour at the Gateway Arch. So if you're headed down to the Cardinal game, or if you're just wanting to go down and go up in the arch, stop by and visit us. Ronj, BT, and I will all be at the Gateway Arch tomorrow from 3 to 7. And we will also be on remote on Monday, as I will have my St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup tattoo applied.
Nice.
We are going to be in Troy, Missouri. We're going to be at the Ink Spot. The application will be shown live on Facebook, so we'll have that for you. We'll be broadcasting live from the Ink Spot in Troy, Missouri, and people are welcome to come out and check that out, see me get the tattoo applied, and get their own tattoos if they want.
Do you have you got the tattoo drawn up yet?
Yes, I do.
That's so awesome. And where are you going with it?
It'll be on my back shoulder.
The back shoulder?
Yeah.
So. It hurts there.
I can handle it.
It hurts everywhere.
I've got pain tolerance. I can handle it. Oh, by the way, also tomorrow.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
I took punch in the face for a living, but it hurt like hell to get a tattoo.
Also tomorrow at 3:30, Albert Pujols will join us here in the Fast Lane. We always love visiting with him, and he'll check in from the ballpark when he makes his way to Busch Stadium. Coming up next in the Fast Lane, Chris Kerber is going to join us. We also want to talk a little bit about the NBA draft. We are hours away from Zion Williamson, who is the most notable draft pick since LeBron James, being taken by the New Orleans Pelicans. And we had a chance to visit with Zion earlier in the offseason as he won the Player of the Year award here in St. Louis. We had a chance to talk to him, and we'll hear from Zion Williamson next on 101 ESPN. That's Zion Williamson. He'll be the number one pick, presumably tonight, by the New Orleans Pelicans. He's going to be the number one pick by the Pelicans in the NBA draft. What an incredible talent he is.
Oh, he is just a beast. And, you know, you look at guys like LeBron James who didn't play college, or, you know, the last guy that, for me, that I really remember being that dominant coming out of the draft was Shaquille O'Neal, where there was absolutely, he didn't even need to show up. He was first overall, and he's going to be dominant in the game. You knew it was going to happen. Just that special a talent. And this guy can run, he can jump, he can obviously dunk. I don't think there's any dunks he can't do, but maybe there is a couple he needs to work on. He's just a beast.
And when he gets drafted tonight, he will right away be the heaviest player in the NBA, 285 pounds.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 285 pounds, so maybe it's not that insane. Well, he's a little different than mine.
Yeah. There you go. Your Blues questions on 101 ESPN. You can send in your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780, or you can leave us a mic drop if you'd like with the 101 ESPN app. how about this from the 314? How would you feel if you were Mike Yeo when the Blues won?
Be happy that I got an assistant coaching job in Philly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Obviously, he's disappointed that he wasn't able to bring out of the St. Louis Blues what Chief was able to do. So there's got to be levels of disappointment to watch them go on and do the things that they did. You know, he's probably got a moment in his life where he's like, well, I didn't have Jordan Binnington. You know, or didn't have, you know, but at the end of the day, he couldn't get the guys to do it. And he's got that, always had a reputation as a great players coach. And sometimes you can be too good of a players coach. And I think that that's where he runs. I think he's a great assistant coach. I think he'll do great things in Philadelphia or wherever he lands. And you can be an assistant coach and be very associate coach and make good money and have good say in what's going on if you can find the right guy. Joel Quenneville and Mike Kitchen is a perfect example. Just the AB, right? And so he's a guy that has been a head coach and can do that. He'll be fine.
Losey, did you hear the admission of Patrick Maroon last night on Bravo TV.
I did not.
So they were asking, they had a little game that they were playing, and here is Andy Cohen in the clubhouse on Bravo with Patrick Maroon.
This guy once hooked up with a fellow hockey player's mom when he was a senior in high school. Was it Shep? Adam? Patrick?
What's that?
Colton? Or Joel?
I'm going to say it was St. Louis's own Pat Maroon.
Yeah.
Yes!
Wow!
Pat, you hooked up with a teammate's mom?
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
So the question is, Mr. Lowe, have you ever kissed one of your teammates' moms?
I have never kissed one of my teammates' moms. Well, that's a little bit of a lie. Brent Johnson's mom would kiss me, and she would try and go a little bit further, but I always had to keep it clean.
Oh, man. What an admission by Patrick Maroon when he was a senior in high school, too.
That's pretty intense.
Assuming, this is from the 618, assuming that the Blues do trade Jake, do they promote Husso or to back up, or expect a backup goalie to come back in a trade or via free agency?
Well, I think that it has a lot to do with what their minor league system looks like next year and what happens with, you know, unrestricted free agency or free agency or whatever. I don't think that that's real high on the Blues board right now. I think that they've got a guy that they know is going to be their number one goalie. And whoever it is going to be backup is going to play 25 games. And so there's enough guys out there. Husso, you know, he's the guy that was supposed to be in this position, not Binnington. And he was the guy that was supposed to be the runner-up to that next starting job in the St. Louis Blues. So it might be interesting to see him in there and maybe, you know, get a few more games. I've always been a fan of a two-goalie system, mm-hmm. having a number one, but I don't think it's great for goalies. And I think there's few and far between that are Grant Fuhr, Patrick Waugh, and Martin Brodeur that can play the game today and play 70 games a year. I just don't think it's healthy for them. I just don't think that's the way you need to do it anymore. Get a good starting guy that's going to give you 50, 55 games and try and play the other guy 25 or 30 games.
I don't know where Brian Elliott's head is. He played for less than $2 million last year. He's a free agent. He's going to be 35 next year. He's 34. And he, if he's at that point in his career where he is willing to accept being the number two guy, I don't know that he is. I would assume that he is.
I'll tell you right now.
He still wants to play.
Brian Elliott's a good friend of mine, and I talk to him occasionally. And when he comes to town, we go for lunch or dinner or whatever it is. And first off, he's one of the greatest teammates that the guys have ever had. And he's not been one of my teammates, but I know a lot of guys that, and I just know the respect level that these guys have for him. He's been around the block. He's been up and down. He's been sent to the minors as a guy that's a regular starting goalie 4 or 5 years ago and then came back and took the Blues on their run, right? He's had the same things go on that Jordan has. And I tell you what a guy to be able to bring in at the right dollar amount and be that backup guy and be able to give you those minutes, because I'll tell you, we all saw Brian Elliott be a great backup goalie and come in and give you those minutes that you need to be a top echelon team. Today, your backup goalie has to be able to win you some games, because it's tough for the players out there when you're playing those low-level teams. You need that goaltender to come in there and make some saves for you, just like they do when the your number one guy's playing the top team. So, man, I didn't know Brian Elliott was a unrestricted free agent, and I think he'd be a great filler.
I'd sign off on that, too. A couple of other questions for Lozy. From the 314, the players refer to Berube as hard but fair. What does that mean?
That means that he's going to hold you accountable. That means that you can talk to him. There's a lot of times, and it's no different than walking into your boss's office. You walk into your boss's office, you ask a question, you walk out scratching your head, or you got maybe a BS answer, or it wasn't fair what he was saying, or it wasn't logical, and it didn't really make sense. Berube does a very good job of communicating with these guys what he needs them to do. It's real, it's right, and it's fair. And that's why the guys play for him, and that's why it's easy to play for him. Jay Bouwmeester's never played so good as he has under under Chief. So I think when I take a look at that, that shows me that Bo's a really simple guy, and he played more physical than I've ever seen him play. And that's because I guarantee he came into Berube's office and Berube said, listen, this is what I need you to do. No more, less, no more. That's what we need. Do that. And he went out and did it.
And I think one of the underrated aspects of the year was Larry Robinson coming down for a month with those D-men, because Bo is, he's not as tall as Larry. Larry's 6'7", I think, 6'6", and Bo is 6'5", but similar builds, similar games, actually. I think Robinson played a little bit more of a physical style than Bo did, but like you say, Bo became a little bit more like Larry Robinson, one of the top five defensemen of all time.
I think that that was more instrumental, and that's not something that's got a lot of talk of, and I think that was more instrumental in just everything that went on with the Blues. He's in, been in a position in New Jersey where he took over at the trade deadline. They won the Stanley Cup. This was his 10th Stanley Cup. He's the first player to win Stanley Cups in five consecutive decades. Like, the things that this guy has done is off the charts, but he's a guy that is like Berube. He's easy to talk to. He's logical. And it makes sense, and you want to play for that guy. And for a guy that's been a Berube, that's a tough guy, which I did for 10 years and didn't want another second in the job, and for him to do it for 20 years, these guys respect him. They know that he's going to be fair with them, and I think it was huge that Larry Robinson came in. I know he didn't really want to be on the bench, but he did go on the bench, and he got in the dressing room, and he got a little understanding of what that chemistry was really like, and I think that was instrumental down the line.
All right, last question for you from the 314. Dear Mr. Lowe, who had the hardest punch that you ever went up against, and who was the dirtiest player when you played?
The dirtiest player played on my left wing, Tyson Nash. I used to tell Dasher all the time, you fire it up, I'll clean it up. Let's go. You're going to keep me in contracts. Let's do this. But there was lots of guys like Steve Avery was terrible. Jordan Tutu, he was dirty. Tucker, not Chris, up in Toronto. Darcy Tucker.
Yeah.
He was dirty. He even dirtied me. Hardest punch.
Todd Lemieux, were you in the same era?
Yeah, he was, I think, already gone by the time I got in. But, yeah, he's definitely on the list of dirty guys. I might have played against him. I can't remember. But he obviously wasn't that significant when I was there. The hardest punch I ever took, I took a lot of hard punches. But Donald Brashear probably hit me the hardest. It'd be a tie between him and Brad Brown. Brad Brown hit me in New York, Madison Square Gardens, and opened me up for 5 in the eyebrow and 4 underneath, my eye was swollen shut immediately. Like, his knuckle just fit right in my eye socket. And then Donald Brashear hit me with a left hand that I must have had my mouth open or something, but I had a gnarly cut that took all the way through the inside of my mouth. It had to have been 2 inches, 2.5 inches deep.
It hurts to hear.
Yeah, it was a bad one too. So, but that's the price you pay, I guess. I'd sign up again.
Reed Lowe is here. Chris Kerber has joined us. And coming up, we have a new fighter in the 4 o'clock fight here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.